Jesus got in the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake, where a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. "My little daughter is dying," he said. "Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live." Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years she had spent everything she had to pay for them. But she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe. For she thought to herself, "If I can just touch his robe, I will be healed." Immediately the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out from him. So he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my robe?" His disciples said to him, "Look at this crowd pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me?" But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell to her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over." While he was still speaking to her, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue. They told him, "Your daughter is dead. There's no use troubling the teacher now." But Jesus overheard them and said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just have faith." Then Jesus stopped the crowd and wouldn't let anyone go with him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw much commotion and weeping and wailing. He went inside and asked, "Why all this commotion and weeping? The child isn't dead. She's only asleep." The crowd laughed at him, but he made them all leave, and he took the girl's father and mother and the three disciples into the room where the girl was lying. Holding her hand, he said to her, "Talitha koum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And the girl, who was 12 years old, immediately stood up and walked around. They were overwhelmed and totally amazed. Jesus gave them strict orders not to tell anyone what had happened, and then he told them to give her something to eat. And may God add a blessing to the reading of his word.
So we're in the Gospel of Mark, and we've titled the series The Anointed Secret, and you get a little glimpse of that today, and I'm actually not going to focus too much on it, to be honest with you. I'm going to let it remain a secret, I guess. But, this idea of Jesus doing these things and then giving strict orders. Don't tell anybody. You know, don't tell. Don't go out and tell, you know, which probably just means they went out and told everybody. But anyway, this idea, and we've also been asking the question, who is Jesus? And a little bit more than just asking who Jesus is today, not more, I've taken a little different tack on this, I guess you could say, and that I'm going to be looking more at how these two individuals interacted with Jesus and some of the challenges they faced even in these moments of relationship. So that's kind of what I'm going to be doing here today. I want to begin by telling you a story. Many of you maybe have heard this story. It happened actually like in 1982, I believe. So, but it's a true story. I actually double-checked it. You could even find old news clips about it. But it's a story of a 33-year-old truck driver by the name of Larry Walters, who was sitting in his lawn chair in his backyard one day wishing he could fly. For as long as he could remember, he had wanted to fly, but he had never had the time, money, or opportunity to be a pilot. Hang gliding was out because there was no good place for gliding near his home. So he spent a lot of summer afternoons sitting in his backyard in his ordinary old aluminum chair, the kind with the webbing and the rivets. And we don't have them much anymore today, but back in 1982, they were real common. So all you young people are just looking at me going, what? We have plastic chairs now. But they were these old, rickety, rivets holding them together with basically just like almost like a cloth kind of a plastic thing that you'd sit in. So anyway, so one day, Larry hooked up 45 helium-filled surplus weather balloons to his chair. put a CB radio in his lap, tied a paper bag full of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to his leg, and slung a BB gun over his shoulder to pop the balloons when he wanted to come down. Now, one thing I'm going to mention a little out of order in the story is Larry happened to live in the Los Angeles area. So he lifted off in his lawn chair, expecting to climb a couple of hundred feet over his neighborhood. But instead, Larry shot 16,000 feet up into the air, right in the flight path of LAX Airport. All right? Literally, pilots were calling in him. All right? Like they're flying by, waving at Larry Walters in his lawn chair with 45 helium balloons. By the way, 16, that's 3 miles in an aluminum lawn chair. Yeah, I kind of think he might have lost sight of the view. But anyway, but when asked by the press later, which, by the way, you can go learn more about this. It's pretty astounding. He only popped 2 of the balloons and came plummeting down. So like much quicker than he anticipated and thought he was going to lose his life crashing into some power lines. But anyway. High voltage power in an aluminum chair. That's got to work really good. All right. But when asked by the press why he did it, Larry answered, "Well, you can't just sit there." When asked if he was scared, he answered, "Yes. Wonderfully so." Actually, in retrospect, I watched a couple other videos of him. He had no regrets. He got into a little bit of trouble, but he had no regrets. He also made quite a bit of money, selling his rights to the story. But anyway, but I love that. I love this sense of, well, you can't just sit there. Like he took a dream, and in maybe a way that all of us would kind of we chuckle and say is ridiculous. He took a dream and he acted on it. He stepped out. Did something crazy. And when asked, you know, were you scared? Well, yes, I was scared, but wonderfully so. So in our passage today, we have two people, the story of two people who are exercising their faith in the character and power of Jesus. Now, you got to remember, they don't know Jesus. These two characters did not know Jesus the way we do in retrospect, right? We've got hindsight with some understanding as to who Jesus was. But these two people stepped out and stepped through some stuff. They didn't just sit there. They took action. Both of them had to overcome obstacles to do so. Both grew in their faith because of what they did. And both were moved by their faith. And so I want to kind of walk through that with these two characters. But I'm guessing, you know, if we could, maybe when we meet them in heaven, we can approach Jairus and it's interesting, frustrating to me a little bit. The woman has no name. She's just the woman who bled. But I'd like to find her in heaven and say, "Were you scared?" And she'll probably say, "Yes, wonderfully so." You know, and we'll talk about why she was probably scared in that context. So let's take a closer look at these two stories. And look at, first of all, the potential obstacles that each one of these faced in stepping out in faith, in not just sitting there, but moving. There were obstacles. And I was tempted to show a clip from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And in the clip, so I'm going to share it now a little bit. But in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? The guys are in shackles and they're trying to get away. And they come up and there's this old African-American guy, and he's on one of those, he's on a railroad track, and he's just got one of those single, he's just pumping it up and down. He's a prophet, right? And then he sits down and he's like, "You seek a treasure." Yeah, you know, he goes through all this stuff, and then he says, then he talks about how they're going to find the treasure, but there's all these obstacles
that are going to be in their way, which sets up the whole rest of the movie, right? But then I love later, the guy says, the guy said we weren't going to find the treasure because of our obstacles, you know? So anyway, funny to those who have seen it. The rest of you, sorry, just went on a little tangent, which is pretty common for me. But let's look at the story again. So the first person that arises is Jairus. And I'm just going to read over just a few verses here. It says, when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue named Jairus came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, which is an interesting addition in Mark that's not found in Luke. I didn't check Matthew. So he word repeatedly. So he begged him repeatedly, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. So this is pretty amazing because we're told here that Jairus is the ruler of the synagogue. He's the ruler of the synagogue. And this is a man who holds one of the most esteemed positions in his community. So this is not just this is not like what you imagine a lot of the crowd following Jesus is. Are you kind of with me? You kind of get the sense that a lot of the people that were following Jesus and the crowds, you know, they were kind of common people, if we can use that terminology. So this is the leader of the synagogue. This is a man of esteem in his community. And he comes before basically this peasant prophet, kind of a folk healer still. I mean, people really don't know who Jesus is. And he comes before him and basically falls down on his knees and begs him to heal his daughter. So you also can imagine this guy was a person of wealth. He had means. As a synagogue ruler, he was compensated for his position there. People gave and supported him. And so, again, he's a person of standing. Everyone would know him. No one would have expected him to approach Jesus. No one. In a sense, this is kind of like, would be like Ted Wheeler, our mayor. Well, I don't know how. Anyway, no, I won't make a comment. Sorry. Like Ted Wheeler, our mayor, approaching a street preacher and asking the street preacher to pray for a sick daughter when OHSU is just right up the hill. You get the picture here? So what is his obstacle? Primarily, I think Jairus' obstacle was just his pride. He was a man of position. He was a person of influence. Can you imagine what he had to press through in his own pride? What are people going to think? Am I going to lose my position? Am I going to look less in the eyes of the people because I've approached Jesus? What will they think? Will they see me as weak? Will they consider me unfit to rule the synagogue? I mean, can you get this? Are you with me? Are you in the story? Because this is what this guy had to press through. And I'll tell you something. I at times, in really being open in my faith, even around the neighborhood here sometimes, pride is an issue. It may not be for you, but it can be for me. Pride in it, you know, just in just my who I am or in my position or whatever, which is kind of ridiculous, really. But pride. There were barriers. But his 12-year-old daughter was quickly dying, and something inside him believed that this prophet, Jesus, this guy walking through the countryside that's performing miracles, maybe he could heal my dying daughter. And he presses through the obstacle and comes before Jesus. So now let's look over at the bleeding women because their stories are so kind of intertwined here. So Jesus goes with Jairus, heading towards where his daughter is. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. And now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She'd been bleeding for 12 years and seriously bleeding. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. Can you imagine the situation of this bleeding woman? For a Jewish woman, this condition was not only just frustrating, not only was it life-threatening, but it also made her continually unclean. She was constantly considered unclean. It isolated her from her community, from her own family, from those that she loved. And for 12 years, she's been trying to get better and has not gotten better. Anyone who came in contact with her, even with this woman, would be considered unclean until they'd gone through the proper rituals to be clean again. And here in this context, what do we have? What's the scenario? Jesus is surrounded by a crowd of people, and she is unclean. Can you imagine that kind of barrier? In fact, her barrier, I think, and you can maybe think of other things, but I think her barrier, one of her barriers, or two of them at least, was her sense of shame that she'd carried for at least 12 years. As an unclean woman, can I approach Jesus? Everything in my culture tells me I cannot do it. Can I? Will Jesus really? And then can you imagine the fear? If people recognize me as I come through the crowd. This is only a village of about 1,500 people where Jesus is. She was probably known. If the people recognize me, what are they going to do? Will they throw me completely out of the community? You get the picture? Fear. Shame. What is she to do? But she's tried everything. Once she was a woman, probably of significant means. Some wealth, somehow. But she'd spent everything. She'd tried everything. She'd looked everywhere for answers. And not only did she not find them, but her condition grew worse. Listen, she doesn't want a public spectacle. You can see that by even the fact that Jesus doesn't even know for sure who touched her, even though he knew that healing power had gone out from him, you know, or maybe he did, but I don't think he did. He's human. He's God in the flesh here. She doesn't want a public spectacle. All she wants is to touch Jesus. All she wants is to touch Jesus. She believes that if she could do that, she might be healed. I can just imagine her kind of finally making the decision in her heart. I don't care. I don't care how ashamed I am. He might reject me. I have to touch Jesus. And I kind of imagine her just putting her shawl more over her head and trying to hide herself and press and hoping that in the commotion and in the craziness of the crowd, she can just get through before somebody recognizes her and she can touch Jesus. What obstacles do you face? What's holding you back? Fear? Shame? Guilt, your own sense of unworthiness, your pride, what it would really mean to stand out for Jesus. What's holding you back? It could be something else. Your anger, your pain, your bitterness, your blaming of other people that were supposed to be good Christians and weren't. What's holding you back? But we see in our story that both of them pushed through the obstacles. But there was more, even as they did that. Because both of them, even when they step out, face further challenges. Even when they press through their initial hesitancy, there's more obstacles along the way. Let's go back to Jairus, and it may seem interesting to talk about Jairus and tell the rest of the story about the woman, but I'll tell you why. So again, Jairus. So Jesus went with him, that would be Jairus, and a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was this woman, she'd been suffering and she'd endured much, and she had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware, there's that immediately in Mark again, immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. And you say, how does that relate to Jairus? Can you imagine the frustration of Jairus, who came to Jesus saying, "My daughter is dying. Will you please come and touch her and heal her?" And on the way, Jesus seems to get distracted from the mission. And by the way, this woman had bled for 12 years. She could live another day. Jesus could have gone straight to the house and healed the daughter and then gone back and healed the woman. But Jesus doesn't do that. And what happens in this story? As Jesus is distracted, what happens to Jairus' daughter? She dies. I don't know about you, but that does not fit my plan. You know what I'm saying? If I'm Jairus, put yourself in Jairus' shoes. Jesus, if you would have just come straight the moment I asked you, if you would have just done what I think you should have done and come, my daughter would have been healed. And we've actually heard that refrain before, or we'll hear it again, depending on how, in the Gospel of John. Because when, remember with Lazarus? Lazarus died and the sisters were saying, "Jesus, if you would have come when we first asked you." And how many of us do the same? By the way, let me add a little something to that. "Jesus, if you would have just come when we first asked you." Yeah, we laugh, but there's a lot of you not laughing. You want to know why you're not laughing? Because you've stomped your foot and crossed your arms before Jesus too. Yes, you have. Oh, I'm not talking about others. I'm talking about you, Todd. We're not talking about others. We're talking about ourselves. Sorry, Todd, I'm just picking on you. Okay. All right. I know I have. Mark's back there acting out the sermon, by the way, just so you know. Yeah. Okay. Hey. I know I've crossed my arms and stomped my foot. "Jesus, I believed you. I made sacrifices. I gave you my entire life. And this is it? Jesus, I look around, I don't see our city getting any better. I prayed for 30 years here, Lord. I have physically walked almost 50% of the streets in this city praying. I've believed you for revival. And I stomp my foot and I cross my arms. And I just tell Jesus I'm just going to go live on a farm in Eastern Oregon or something. It's too painful." So many dying, like Jairus' daughter. What does Jesus say to Jairus? Have faith. I don't know about you, but it's hard. I mean, I'll just talk about it. It is hard for me to have faith when what I thought I was believing God for, and even thought, let me tell the story that I was going to tell about Sissy. When Sissy first got, when we first got word that Sissy had cancer and that she was going to have a hysterectomy, I felt God speak to my heart so clearly, this is not unto death. I prayed with confidence and faith for her. Then she goes to the surgery. And I don't know how clear this was to most of you, but her prognosis right after surgery was not good. She had, her lymph nodes were, as they call it, what did they say? They said they were ugly. They were swollen, but they were, what's that? They were very ugly. Swollen lymph nodes are not good. And a doctor using the term very ugly is not good. And I remember, this is just a week ago or whatever, but stomping my foot and crossing my arms and saying, if she dies, I don't know what I'm going to do. And to be really honest with you, I was like, God, this is very selfish of me. I said before the whole congregation that this isn't unto death. And you know what the Lord said back to me? Have faith. Is your faith that, but he did, I'm going to add the rest of this, but it's like, is your faith that weak that in the light of one obstacle, you're not going to persist and believe and hang on? Because there's times, you guys, listen, Hebrews 11 is full of people who believe the promises of God and never saw them come to pass in their lifetime. Never. That's not a very 2018 kind of message. But sometimes things don't go the way we think they're supposed to go. Will you persist? Will you continue to love God? To love people. It's often the case that what we think God ought to do right away, God chooses to act on later. And the things that we put off, that we think God might want to put off, or that we put off, God chooses to handle right away. Did you get that? We just don't know. But what does Jesus say again here? Don't be afraid. Just believe and she will be healed. And I believe Jesus still says this today. In the midst of our pain, our disappointment, our frustration, he calls for a faith that is calm, persistent, and trusting. I want to walk in that way. I want to walk in a way that trusts the character of Jesus. No matter what. The trust in this Jesus that we're studying in Mark, and the Jesus that I think most of us in this room have encountered in some way or another, the Jesus who's presented to us in Scripture and in throughout church history and in the lives of millions upon millions of people who have even willingly sacrificed their physical lives. I don't want to just wilt because of some obstacle. Or because I think God should have done this, but God is choosing to do something a little bit differently. Let's look at the woman just real quick here. I need to move. I don't remember when I got up here, so. But what about the woman? She seems to have great faith, doesn't she? While she had faith, even Jesus said, "Your faith has healed you, go in peace." Hers was still what I would perceive to be somewhat of a timid faith. She wanted, and Jesus, I believe, wanted her timid faith to become a testifying faith. And sometimes we too are afraid to openly testify as to what God has done in our lives. We are embarrassed and afraid. But Jesus challenged this woman's faith. "Who touched me?" And then in front of the whole crowd, she falls down again and testifies that Jesus had healed her. It says she was trembling with fear. But she did it. And her faith, I believe, grew. She testified before all the people what Jesus had done for her. So the last thing I just want to touch on is that I believe that faith, and I don't want to make this just about us, because it's our faith is grounded in someone. You know that, right? It's grounded in the person and nature of Jesus, the character of Jesus, who we're looking at in the Gospel of Mark. But do you remember the man who flew 16,000 feet into the air in his lawn chair? What did he say? "You just can't sit there." Both Jairus and the woman, motivated by faith, felt the same way. "I can't let Jesus just pass me by. I got to move. I've got to move. And what direction did they move in, by the way? In the direction of Jesus, the person. They were moved and they made the move. Nothing was going to change if they didn't make that move. Think about it. I mean, and I think sometimes we're moved, but we don't move. We're moved, but we're afraid. And I speak it with compassion. I mean, I'm not trying to be hard. I've been moved and have not moved. Because my own pride or my fear or my shame or my sense of guilt or whatever hindered me from moving. So trust me, it's with some empathy that I am extending really to us an invitation today to move. Not away from grace, but towards grace. Faith moved Jairus, the synagogue ruler, to fall at Jesus' feet and beg repeatedly in the presence of all the people. And faith moved an unclean woman to press through the crowd so that she could touch him. Because they allowed faith to conquer their pride, shame, and fear, their faith was also able to grow. She was asked to bring her faith out of its shell, and he was called on to have a faith that persisted in spite of the circumstances. I think Jesus is still doing this today. I really do. And again, it's not so much about your faith, but about the person you're putting your faith in. I want to keep making that point. This can't lay a burden on you that's unrealistic. It's about moving towards Jesus. So what about you? What is holding you back? Does your faith move you? Or are you just sitting there? Augustine once said, when writing about the woman in this passage, he said, "Few are they who by faith touch him. Multitudes are they who throng around him." Love that quote. The invitation stands today. We can continue to just sit here, kind of go through the motions and kind of do the church thing, I guess. or we can move towards Jesus. Which is, when we worship, by the way, like I always need our worship time, but, you know, I came in here today really physically tired. And I needed to move. I needed to move. And in worship, if you think about the words, so many of them are prayers. Our songs are prayers. Or they're declarations and affirmations of our faith. And we move towards Jesus. So today, you know, we have communion. It's an easy way to move. Most of you are pretty comfortable with coming up to take communion. But I'm going to just say that I think there's other times that God asks us to move. That's why I still believe in altar calls. Even though I don't always see, you know, sometimes I want to stop my foot and cross my arms over that. I don't see maybe as many people moving as I think they should. But again, this is not to lay guilt on anybody, but I think things hold us back. When it's a very simple way to move. It's a very simple way to just get up and move, and you're moving towards the telephone. Lord, I struggle sometimes when challenging, quite frankly, myself and others. I don't want this to turn into just a guilt thing. My heart is to hear the invitation and to extend the invitation. To cut the line. That's what that guy did. He was tethered to the top, the roof of his house. And he cut the line and shot 16,000 feet up into the air. May we hear, may we see you, Jesus. And may we respond when you're moving us. Help us to overcome our obstacles and to press through the crowds in order that we might touch you. And Lord, I don't know what it would be today. Each one of us has a story in this room. Each one of us is living life and doing the best we can. But there may be something today that we really need you to do something. Or maybe we've been asking you and it just hasn't happened the way we thought, but we just need to not be afraid. Not give up, to continue to put our trust in you. So Lord, as we come today, as we continue in worship, and as we have the communion table set before us, we envision this table in many ways, it is a representation, Lord. The body is your life and body and blood is represented in the bread and in the wine and the juice. And so with an intentionality, God, when we are worshiping, we want to get up and move towards you. And we bring to the table, Lord, our very selves, our lives, our hearts, our fears, our sin, our concerns,
whatever. And we move towards you, Jesus. And I'm asking God, and again, I can't tell you how to do stuff, but I'm asking that today that we would experience miracles. Whatever that might be. Or that today would be the beginning of a miracle in some situation or circumstance or whatever. We move towards you now, Jesus. Amen.